We'll jump right now to the next segment and get to the State Department of Health Services, and then give us a similar overview of their capabilities and what they do. So I'll turn it over to John. Thank you, Doctor. Thank you. My name is Dr. John Villanacci. I'm the Director for the Environmental Injury Epidemiology and Toxicology Unit. I've been with the Department of State Health Services for over 20 years. Some of the other things I do with the department, chair of the Toxic Substance Coordinating Committee, chair of the Institutional Review Board, the Scientific Review Panel, and the Committee on Release of Requests for Personal Data. Next slide. This is the mission statement of our unit. Just so you know, we use principles of epidemiology and toxicology and surveillance to identify populations at risk to develop evidence-based actions to protect and promote the people of Texas. Next slide. This is the year we're in. I'm just going to give you a brief overview here. We have three main units and branches down here in the bottom. We're the one on the farthest side over there. We also have, very conveniently, the birth defects epidemiology surveillance branch as well as the cancer epidemiology and surveillance branch within our section, which makes for a lot of cross activities with these three units. Next slide. This is just a description of the unit we're in, various functions. We have the child-led and adult-led surveillance, the exposure assessment, epidemiology, as well as injury and EMS and trauma epidemiology and surveillance. Next slide. These are some of the programs and activities that we undertake. Environmental and occupational epidemiology. For those of you who don't know what epidemiology is, it's the study of the distributions and determinants of diseases in populations, in a nutshell. So we do injury, silicosis, asbestosis surveillance. We have the child-led poison prevention, child blood-led registry, adult blood-led health assessment, toxicology. We also administer the Texas Poison Center Network within the state. Pesticide exposure. We administer the Texas Environmental Health Institute, as well as the Texas Fluoridation Project. Next slide. I'm going to really concentrate here on the parts of my unit that relate more to what this situation is, and that's the Exposure Assessment and Surveillance Group. This group has many functions, but really it deals with the environment and disease. We basically work with federal and state partners to investigate allegations and suspicions of the effects of environmental exposures on human health, in a nutshell. We evaluate environmental information for potential public health impact. We also conduct exposure investigations to aid in this, such as taking, if you will, precious bodily fluids and looking for environmental contaminants in people to see if they've been exposed to various chemicals. Next slide, please. On staff, we have toxicologists, medical toxicologists, epidemiologists, environmental specialists. We have people that work with the community, as well as people that provide health education, community education. Next slide, please. We have a lot of cross-agency coordination that goes on, as you can imagine, because the environment is very complicated. And we're serving the public health role within that coordination. The Toxic Substance Coordinating Committee is a legislatively mandated committee that mandates that several agencies get together and work together on toxic substances, if you will. These five agencies, there's a lot of other agencies involved, but these are the five agencies that are probably the most active within the TSCC. The Texas Department of State Health Services, the Texas Commission of Environmental Quality, Texas Railroad Commission, Texas Department of Agriculture, and Texas Parks and Wildlife. Next slide, please. We also administer the Texas Environmental Health Institute, which I mentioned previously. This is, if you will, a joint venture. It's a legislatively mandated joint venture between the TCEQ and my agency, DSHS. And I guess the main mission of it is to examine ways to identify, treat, manage, prevent, reduce health problems associated with environmental contamination. We fund various research projects, usually through universities, or we conduct research projects ourselves within the context of other health institutes. And we work very closely with TCEQ staff from the toxicology division on these types of investigations. Next slide, please. I'm going to briefly go over our involvement in this site, or this area, if you will. And our involvement really deals more right now with the Dish area, the city of Dish. We were contacted by Mayor Tillman. He requested certain things, mainly which consisted of community testing. This is actually the first we had heard about the situation at that time. We contacted TCEQ and the Texas Railroad Commission to get information from them. That's the first thing we do when we get these types of concerns. TCEQ sent us their evaluation of the Wolf Eagle environmental data, which was the data that was available at the time. And based upon their evaluation, after our review of their evaluation, we determined that if the levels were indeed representative of the actual exposures that were occurring in the community, that an investigation by us was warranted. Next slide, please. So, of course, first thing we have to do if you're going to conduct an investigation, identify funds for the investigation, which is the first thing we did. I had my staff prepare documentation so we can get this approved through the Institutional Review Board. The Institutional Review Board, for those of you who are not familiar with it, is really a board that is designed and there to protect, to ensure the protection of human subjects. So if people involved in studies and research investigations, we always recommend it goes by the IRB to ensure that people are properly protected. And that the risks are minimal to the people involved. We coordinated with the Centers for Disease Control and the National Centers for Environmental Health Laboratory, and we contacted them and made arrangements with them to actually do the sample analysis. So all the samples we collected, which we did collect, so I'll get to that in a second, were sent to the CDC laboratories for analysis. The main reason for that, one, it's a very, very good laboratory, and two, this investigation involved collection of biological samples that we were going to measure various volatile organic compounds, such as benzene and others, in blood and urine, and the metabolites of those compounds, in blood and urine of residents. And we were going to compare what we found in the residents' bodies with what has been found in people throughout the United States. So it's really a comparison to see if what we're seeing in the people in Dish are higher, the same, lower, whatever, than what we're seeing in people throughout the United States. This is the laboratory that actually conducts and does the analysis for what's called the NHANES, National Health and Nutrition Survey, that reports those data for the United States. So they have made these measurements in other people, and we're going to compare to those measurements. And we're using the same laboratory to do that. We randomly selected 65 homes and actually contact residents to request participation. Next slide, please. This past weekend, my staff were out there working in the town of Dish and collected biological and environmental samples. We collected blood, urine, and we also collected tap water samples from each of the individuals' homes for analysis. And they were out there from January 22nd to 24th. The samples were immediately sent to the CDC laboratory, and right now we're just awaiting the results. Next slide, please. The next steps, once we get the results, we'll analyze the results, interpret the results, and we will notify the participants of their individual results. Okay, so people will get their own individual results. We will prepare a report of the findings. Of course, we can't release individuals' results to others in the community, but we will prepare a report of the aggregate information, if you will, indicating what we found. De-identified, so you know, people are free to share it if they like, but we can't share other people's information. We will present the report to the community, and we'll also provide the report and our recommendations, if there are any, to our sister agencies. As soon as the CDC lab does the analysis, which they assured me that they were going to jump on right away, as soon as we get the results, we will begin that. And I would anticipate, from the time we get the results, within a month, if not Syria.
And results in
love? Oh, I think it's going to be sooner than that, but I don't quite know. Susan, do you have any idea for CDC?
I think
they
say on about a month.
Okay. So, next slide, please. This is our contact information. If anybody's interested, we have a website as well as an email address, which my staff check daily if you have any questions and comments, concerns. And just to backtrack just one sec, we do work very closely with the Cancer Registry, and Dr. Miller will present what the Cancer Registry is doing right now. Usually when we have environmental concerns, and there's a lot of concerns of cancers, we contact them. If there's birth defects concerns, we contact our birth defects registry, work with them on trying to address those concerns. Conversely, when they get concerns and there's an environmental component to it, they contact us and we start investigating. Because we're kind of the bridge on the environmental aspect between us and our other agencies. So that's how we basically function. And I'll turn it over to Dr. Miller. Thank you.
All right, thank you. You're almost there, I admit. So, first, I just wanted to thank you for inviting us to come here. I mean, I hope this is informative for you and helpful, and appreciate you, you know, braving the weather to come here. So, do we have a... It was on there, I saw it. What's that? It was on... I saw it on the desktop. It's Flower Mound, number 5. Okay. Okay. We have slides. Okay, so
three.
Yeah, I wasn't gonna be able to wing this one. So I'm Eric Miller. I'm currently the epidemiology manager in the Texas Cancer Registry, and I've been in this position a little over a year, and I've been with the agency around 5 years, both as an employee of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and then now recently as a state employee for the agency. So, we're going next. So what I wanted to go over in this talk is first talk about what cancer is, and make sure that we're all sort of on the same page, as far as understanding, what cancer is. I'll tell you about the Cancer Registry, the work we do, and what our purpose is. And I'll talk about cancer clusters in general and how the Department of State Health Services responds to cancer concerns. And then I'll talk specifically about our role in the investigation that we're doing in Flower Mound. Okay, so we always sort of talk about cancer in general terms, but in reality, cancer is not one disease, it's many diseases. So lung cancer is different from colon cancer, is different from breast cancer. These are all different diseases, and there's a lot of cancer. So over a lifetime, it's estimated that between 1 in 2 and 1 in 3 people at some point will develop cancer. And so, we all, I can probably safely say, know someone who's been affected by cancer. But these are all sort of different diseases, and what characteristic holds it all together is that these cells have an uncontrolled growth of abnormal cells. And so these abnormal cells have the ability to spread to nearby tissues as well as other parts of the body through blood and lymph system. And then there's other tumors, like benign tumors and certain childhood cancers that aren't considered cancerous. And the reason is because the cells in these tumors don't have the ability to invade nearby tissue or spread to other parts of the body. Okay, and so because, there are all these different cancers, there's also a lot of different causes of cancer. And, different cancers have different causes. And then cancer, like many diseases, is a complex disease. So, it takes both external factors, like tobacco, smoke, is carcinogenic, but then also internal factors, like our genetic makeup, to cause a disease. And so that's why not everyone that smokes develops cancer. But we do know, that lifestyle and other controllable risk factors are linked to over two-thirds of cancer deaths. And, these are things like tobacco, diet, physical activity, and alcohol. Now, most experts believe that fewer than 10% of cancer cases are to do to occupational hazards and pollution. Okay, so the Cancer Registry, what we are, is a population-based surveillance system that collects, manages, analyzes, and disseminates Texas cancer incidence data. And what that means is that being population-based means we try to collect information on every cancer case that occurs in the state of Texas. And what we mean by cancer incidence data, we're talking about newly diagnosed cancers. And so, you know, the primary cancer, if it's spread to another part of the body, you know, that's not information we can collect. It's really just the primary diagnosis. But using primary data, we are the primary source of, you know, cancer information in the state. I'll try not to do that again. Okay, so we are the fourth largest registry in the United States, and not far off from moving up the ladder there, too. And cancer registries and, you know, cancer data collection follows very standard protocols and, you know, quality assurance procedures that we must go through to have quality data. And we're evaluated on this annually. And currently we achieve the highest level of certification for both data quality and timeliness. And this is evaluated by the CDC, or Centers for Disease Control, and the North American Association of Central Cancer Registries, or CDCR. And the type of information we collect in the registry are the type, extent, and location of the cancer, initial treatment data, some key demographic information, and then we collect vital status and cause of death as well. And our data are used for, you know, a number of different purposes. So, you know, we monitor cancer trends over time. We're able to use our data to identify which populations are at highest risk of developing cancer, facilitate cancer research. You know, we can use our data to evaluate if our cancer prevention and control efforts are, you know, being effective, or are effective. Healthcare delivery systems use our data to determine if, you know, how much to allocate resources to cancer. Cancer education programs, you know, are based on what they see in our data. And then, you know, we do a lot of work in the registry trying to make our data, you know, available, you know, to requesters and communities and, you know, the public to make sure, it, you know, people have the ability to know what their cancer burden is in their community. And then last but not least, we also use our data to investigate suspected cancer clusters. Okay, and so, you know, when people talk about clusters, different people can mean different things. So, you know, the dictionary says a number of persons, animals, things gathered or situated close together. Epidemiologists, you know, talk about clusters in a much more specific way, and that is a greater than expected number of cancer cases or deaths that occur in a group of people in a specific geographic area over a specific time period. But really, you know, what the general public is usually thinking when, you know, we talk about clusters, there's way too much cancer in my, you know, neighborhood, school, or town. Okay, so how do we respond to, you know, cancer concerns in the state? Well, as John mentioned, we work collaboratively with his group to investigate these cancer concerns. And, you know, one of the things we do is conduct investigations of suspected cancer clusters. We also work with other federal and state agencies and local governments, and then we also work, you know, with, you know, researchers, usually from universities, for occupational and other studies. Okay, so I'm not going to go through this, but I just wanted to show that we do follow, you know, a really standard protocol developed by CDC in how we, you know, address cancer concerns. And then, here's the next one. Yeah, okay, so right now, you know, we're in sort of a combination of stage one and stage two of this process where we're still gathering information and we're also, you know, beginning the assessment phase to determine if there is evidence of a cancer cluster in the area. And, you know, we do a lot of cancer cluster investigations each year. I mean, right now we average, you know, roughly 30 per year, but you can see it was much higher in the 1990s. And, you know, not really limited to a particular area of the state. We really cover, you know, statewide for the investigations we conduct. Okay, now as far as the methods go, what we do is, we look at the actual number of observed cases that we see in a particular area and compare that to what would be expected. And what that means is we take state rates and, you know, apply that to the community we're looking at to see if, you know, the number of observed cases in that community is higher than lower than what we'd expect if that community had the state rates. So this takes into consideration race, sex, and ages of the population we're looking at. And then because rates and numbers vary, you know, we have confidence intervals that we use that, you know, sort of make, gives us a range of numbers that, you know, is either significantly higher than what we'd expect or it's within a range of what we'd expect. And if it falls outside the range and is statistically significant, what that means is the chance of it being, or the likelihood of it being by chance is less. Okay, so now the questions that a cancer cluster investigation can actually answer is, you know, really just whether there are more cases than expected in a given area in the specified time. So these studies aren't designed to, you know, establish that a particular exposure caused a particular cancer. But what this, you know, data is useful for is generating theories, helping determine whether additional study is needed, and providing support if needed for public health interventions. But there are a number of limitations to this, you know, study design as well. One of them, cancer in general takes a really long time to develop. So especially for adults, you know, 10 or more years can often pass between, you know, being exposed to a cancer-causing agent and then the development of a cancer that can be detectable. And so one of the problems that causes in cluster analysis studies is that, you know, we're a mobile population and people move. And so we can have people that lived in the community for a long time and moved away and were diagnosed somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Or we can have people that live somewhere else where they may have been exposed to, you know, cancer-causing agent, moved into the community. And so in our data, we collect the address of diagnosis. And so that is one of our limitations. There's also a number of other things that we know cause cancer, and, you know, these aren't things that we're able to collect, things like, you know, our diet and tobacco use. And so we can't control for these things in our analysis. And, you know, there is some randomness to when and where cancers are diagnosed. And so, you know, cancer clusters can occur by chance and may not necessarily be due to, you know, common or identifiable cause. And then finally, you know, small populations is an issue for cluster analysis because even large epidemiologic studies, you know, sometimes struggle to have enough cases to find associations. And so when we're working with small populations, we're having sort of less precise estimates of rates and more variations in numbers. And then there's also the fact that, you know, even though, you know, people in a small community can share environmental exposures, they also a lot of times share behavioral factors. And so, you know, we have communities that have much higher smoking rates than the rest of the state. And so it appears that we have sort of clusters of tobacco-related cancers in these communities when you compare their rates, you know, to the state overall. So as far as clusters go, there's some things we look for that make things more likely that it is a true cluster. So a large number of cases of one type of cancer. So like I said earlier, you know, lung cancer is different from prostate, different from breast. And so we look for one particular cancer. And, you know, typically a rare type of cancer rather than common types. And then, you know, sometimes a number of specific types of cancer in age groups that we don't typically see. Okay, so now to what our role in the investigation in Slough amount. It's a two-part investigation. And for our data from 1998 to 2007, a 10-year period, this is the data that have gone through all the quality assurance procedures. We are going to do a cluster analysis of childhood leukemia of all subtypes, leukemia of all subtypes in all ages, and then non-Hodgkin's lymphoma of all ages. But we've also been taking calls from the community about a number of other, you know, cancer sites that people are concerned about. And so we are evaluating, you know, those sites as well, you know, to determine if, you know, we have enough information to really do a cluster analysis of them. But we are going to be evaluating them. And this is an investigation we will continue to update as new data become available. Okay, so the second part is the more recent data that we're continuing to, you know, go through the quality assurance procedures from 2008 on. And we're already currently working to medically confirm the number and the type of childhood cancers reported. And we've been, you know, taking a lot of calls and working with the community to get as much information as we can and see if, you know, and make sure that we have the cases that are known in the community in our system. And then if we don't, or we have missing information, then we're working with healthcare providers to, you know, try and fill in these gaps. And so this information is still important to us, even though it isn't part of the, you know, the formal cluster analysis, because it still provides evidence compared to earlier years in cluster analysis if, you know, we are seeing, you know, more cases than we really would have expected. So, and one more. And just to sort of clarify why we can't use the 2008 present data in the cluster analysis, you know, we really need to do, you know, a scientifically valid study, complete statewide data to estimate the number of expected cases. So even though we can really do a lot of work in the community and make sure we have complete data, it requires complete data statewide and that has gone through all the quality assurance procedures, because otherwise we can get erroneous results. And we really need to make sure we are doing as scientifically valid investigations as we can. And finally, you know, the reason it does take so long, and this is sort of standard nationally for all the processes we have to go to. So there are a lot of processes, but then there's also a big workload. So at the registry, we receive approximately 250,000 reports of cancer each year. And this is, you know, for 100,000 newly diagnosed cancers. What that means is that people go and are diagnosed in one place, may see treatment in another, maybe a second opinion at another. And so there's potentially three reports, and we have to make sure we have all that data. We don't have three reports and consolidate into one. And so that is, you know, part of the workload issue. And so it does take a substantial amount of time to make sure that we have, you know, complete and accurate data to work with. Okay. So this is, you know, our general contact information. And, you know, we do have a very good website where you can learn a lot about, you know, cancer in Texas. But then if you don't find what you're looking for or, you know, don't understand everything, you know, we always are happy to take emails and phone calls at the above cancer data. And then if you have, you know, specific questions for me or this presentation down the road, go to the next slide. Here's my contact information as well. So thank you very much.
Just a quick question to kind of summarize this. So in the event that when we get data back on this, obviously you hope that you don't have a cluster. In the event that you did have a cluster, then talk about just briefly what the next step is to try to identify the source, if you will. Can you speak to that for a moment?
Yeah, I mean, once it really gets to that point, then it's really our collaboration with Environmental Health and all these other groups. You know, we're a piece of the evidence, and then that's really as much as the cancer registry can do as far as showing the cluster, and then it's really working with all these other groups to move on to next steps.
Thank you, Dr.
Thank you, Doctor, and thank you all for hanging with us tonight.